My name is Carol Gavin, and I am a professor of liberal arts. Liberal arts is everything. Actually, I am everything that I am. What I am is what I am not what you are. You are very good in technology. You are very good in math. You are very good in the sciences. Is that correct? Oh. Okay, good. Well, I mean, actually, I am okay in math, but my focus is the liberal arts. In particular, I had a double major in college. I had a double major of English and French. So I, at the college, teach two subjects. My college is in New Jersey, which is on the east coast of the United States. We are sandwiched between New York City and Philadelphia. So anyone who wants to be in both places comes to New Jersey. I teach there. I teach at a community college. In the United States, community colleges began in, I would say, mid-60s. A community college is a college where you go. You do not have to pay as much money as if you went to a four-year college, and you get the first 2 years of the university. And then you transfer to a four-year school, or you finish with your program. Is there anyone who has ever been to the United States? Okay. Are you originally from the United States? Or okay, but you've traveled there. Okay. An important part of a presentation is knowing your audience. So, number one, I'll ask, do you all understand me while I'm speaking? Yes. Okay, good. Okay, that's great. Number two, did you all want to learn about resumes and job cover? Okay, very good. Okay. So what I will do is I will offer a perspective. Again, I teach French to English speakers, so I teach French, and I also teach English to non-native speakers. So someone coming over to the United States would come to my program, our program. I get possessive, my program. Come to our program, and we have students from all different countries. So for us to have all of one language in the classroom is very strange. I am here this month, for the month of May. I arrive May 1st, and I will leave May 31st. I'm here for exactly 1 month, and I will be here. The reason I am here is because the English program with electrical engineering has an exchange program with the faculty of my college. Faculty means, in English, it does not mean like faculty of electrical engineering. Faculty means what? Who are my travelers to the United States? Now no one went. Who went to the United States? What does faculty mean in English? Not a department, not a school. And this is what we refer to in language as a misleading cognate. It sounds like the faculty, university, school, but faculty means teachers. A faculty exchange means an exchange of teachers. So in, I may hang myself with this, but in September of 2004, two English faculty came from electrical engineering, and this month of May, I am the lucky one who is here to visit the classes, and that's what I'm doing. I'm visiting classes, and that kind of gives a background about me. Before I start, do you have any quick questions about the United States or about me or in general? As any good presenter would do, as any good student would do, you should always cite your source. If you don't, what is it called in English? Begins with a P, ends with an ism. Pl, pl, hm?
Pl, no.
Close. It has an ism at the end. Plagiarism, exactly. So, remember I teach French and English, English composition, speech, reading skills. So, looking for a job is not something that is my total expertise, but I do a lot of guiding of students to jobs. So, what I would like to do is share with you a great website, which is where a lot of the material that I've gotten comes from, careerbuilder.com. And careerbuilder, of course, is one word, and sorry for all the capitals. As you know, you don't need the capitals. You're in the business. I mean, you're the experts with the computers. I'm telling you, you don't need the capitals. Okay, careerbuilder.com, because you're not just looking for a job, you're building a career. You're building a career. So careerbuilder.com gives many, many points with regard to exactly that. Job search strategy, career management, how you can manage your career. Not just that you take a job because it's the first one that's offered to you, but because you're going to, let's highlight the whole thing, because you're going to manage your career. Not only career management, but hiring trends. About 5 years ago in the United States, if you were a nurse, forget it, you could not get a job because the job slump, the demand was down here. Now, there is such a demand for nurses that every nurse can have at least 3 jobs if she or he wants it. Not only that, hospitals are trying to steal nurses from each other. Oh, here, come over to us. We'll give you a bonus. So the idea is you have to be prepared for the cycles of employment. I hear that things are pretty good for hiring electrical engineers right now, right? Who are our electrical engineer people? Do we have any electrical? Okay, we do. I've noticed that sometimes if a teacher asks a general question or a presenter asks a general question, very few people raise the hand. I've noticed that. So now I have to stop doing that. It's only been 12 days, but it's a habit I have. Okay, electrical engineering. Okay, so you are. Okay. So they say the job market is pretty good. You could probably get a job without even a great resume. However, a resume is something that is like a flower. You have to constantly take care of it. Let's make it a plant. It's a plant. You have to take care of it. The time you stop taking care of and improving your resume is when you die. Because if you don't, you will find that your resume will become stagnant, that you are not paying attention to the talents and the skills that you are acquiring in your career. So you must constantly look at your resume, have other people look at it, say, what is it that can make this better? And I'm going to give you some of the reasons for that. You might also consider, as you get older and more experienced, consider having more than one resume, because I'm in 2 separate fields, English, French, and so I have my English-focused resume, my French-focused resume, and then my resume that mixes all of it in together. But your resume is essentially an ad. You are selling yourself. And what you have to do is make sure that it's a slick ad. You're for sale. Why? It has to be really good. It has to be very simple because of something that we call applicant tracking systems. An applicant tracking system is what human resource managers are using in order to handle the volume of people that apply to their jobs. So for, say, 2 jobs, I'm going to pick electrical engineering because I'm here teaching in the electrical engineering school, and I really like electrical engineers now. So suppose you're applying for a job. They only have 2 openings, but they might get 150 applications for this position. What is going to make your resume stand out? And I'm going to show you that. But the important thing is that you know that your resume is not just going to be looked at by a human being. The first person who reads your resume, it might be a person, but you work with them all the time. It might be a computer. Because your paper resume, or even if you apply online, it will be part of what is called an applicant tracking system. It helps the scanner, this applicant tracking system, helps human resource people to keep track of all the applications. What is human resources? What do you understand by the term human resources? Now you can break it down. Human, okay, human beings, resources, okay, so kind of people, resources. But what specifically is human resources? Anyone?
People in the firm who takes care of people who are coming into firm. Their job is to look for the applicants and
searching. Exactly.
And picking up the possible further employments of the firm who are most or the best for
the best for the job. So human resource department in any company is in charge of taking care of advertising the jobs as well as making sure the jobs are filled. They're the people who get the resume first of all. So the idea is human resource managers might be the first people to look at your resume, but it may actually be scanned and put into an electronic file. So what you have to do is make sure that you have a resume that is clean. And I'll tell you what we mean by clean. Concise, meaning very brief. We talked about it being one page, but there are one-page resumes, and then there are one-page resumes. You want a resume that is not too full. Let's jump right down. If you want your resume to be clean, to the point, and you want it to highlight your most important qualities. And remember, the only reason you're doing this is because you want the job. You have to spend a lot of time on it. You want to forget the fancy fonts. Boring is better. Why is it better? Because the fancy fonts will trip up the scanner. The electronic scanners, as well as human eyes, don't like all the fancy fonts. You should also not overdo underlining, bolding, italics. You might want to do it because you think everything on that page is important. And it's true, everything is. But the reason you bold or put in italics, it has to be for a reason. When you get older, you want to include old information sparingly. What might seem important now about high school and about college in 10 years really will not seem all that important. So you can kind of condense it. If you look at something and it's irrelevant to your current job, then what do you want to do? You want to cut that information because it no longer belongs. You want to make sure that what you're doing and what you're putting there is relevant to what you're looking for. You want to leave out personal information. If you want to put in a hobby or two, make sure that it's related in some way to your major. You want to make sure that it's something that strengthens your resume and not weakens it. A resume is not supposed to be a novel, so you want to write in what we refer to as sound bites. Never use the word I. You don't use the word my. It shouldn't be part of what your resume is. Now, what I've told you what should not be in a resume. Now I'm going to tell you what you should put in it and who already has a resume. If you could, I know I'm asking another raise your hand question, but okay. I'm going to guess, I won't bet that the Czech Republic will beat the United States, but I'm going to guess that most of you do not have what I'm going to put up here in your resume. Okay, so you tell me after if I'm right. Robin Ryan, a woman who is a career coach. We have ice hockey coaches, we have soccer coaches, basketball coaches, da-da-da coaches. However, the career coach is a person who helps to move someone's career forward. The career coach says, no, don't take that. Remember to do this. It's someone who is going to help a person make the best decisions with regard to a career. So here's one of the favorite titles that I like, 60 Seconds and You're Hired. So Robin Ryan refers to a resume as nothing more than a slick advertisement. You have your resume and it has to be really slick. It has to be sharp. It has to be something that will catch the eye because, and there's the answer right there. If I had an overhead transparency, I would hide it from you, but now you see it because you're all speed readers. That most human resource people or anyone reviewing a resume gives it about 15 to 20 seconds glance. That's your opportunity. That's your window of opportunity. And I hate to say this. I hate to say this. I hate to admit this. When I realized it, I thought, this is really sad. But when you have, when you are serving on what is referred to as a search committee, a search committee is a group of people, maybe four or five people at a company, and their job is to be kind of like the front line. They're supposed to go through the resumes and select the people for interview and then move that person forward, maybe to a higher boss or to a staff. So if you are on a search committee and you agree that you're going to interview maybe five people, you are given a collection of resumes that have been selected by, because the people have applied for this job. You're given a pile of, say, 150 resumes. You're supposed to narrow it down to five, six, seven. You kind of fudge a little. People to interview. Do you know what you do as you go through those resumes? You look for a reason to eliminate them. I hate to say that. You look for things that are wrong. So what you absolutely have to do is when you are applying for a job and you know what the job qualifications are, you have to make sure that your resume is addressing the job qualifications. What I also find fascinating is the number of people who apply for jobs that they are absolutely not qualified for. What was this person thinking when she, as I like to say for she and he, when she applied for this job? So don't even bother applying for jobs that you are not even remotely qualified for. What it does is it makes it a real easy eliminate. So forget her, forget him. Oh, good. So now we're down to a few people. We look for reasons to eliminate, because there are people who are qualified. Okay, what did I do with my glasses? Sure, as soon as I find my glasses. Oh, in here, okay.
So we have a problem for us students because we have no experiences and we need to get some experiences and we are not qualified.
You don't have experiences.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Now, the idea is you say you don't have experience. However, You've been in a classroom. You've been working with faculty members, I think, yes? Have you been doing projects? What have you been doing here for 4 years? What have you been doing? Have you been doing some projects? Don't you do projects, I mean, in front of those computers and all those things you play with? Don't you do things? So what you want to do is you want to take whatever you have, you want to think, okay, I'm at Check Tech, here I am. What are some of the projects that I've worked on with a faculty member? What are some of the presentations I've made just in my little class? You don't have to have wild experiences outside of with regard to job experiences. What you want to do is you want to take the world that you're in now and say, okay, I didn't just come here for 4 years. 3 years? How many years should I say?
Five.
Even more, okay? I didn't just come here for 5 years. I did things while I was here. I worked with certain teachers in a certain class. If you do something, it doesn't have to be a big thing. It might not seem like a big thing to you, but if you give an example of a team project, do you work on projects together, or are you always alone? Sometimes, rarely together? Okay, usually alone. Okay, so even better. So you have this project that you've worked on alone. So what you want to do is you don't want to put simply 5 years at Check Tech, received degree in electrical engineering.
You know why I'm smiling? Because Check Tech is a techno festival.
It's a festival? Oh, good. Well, isn't school kind of like a festival? Okay. Aren't you having fun at school? So that's what we, back in New Jersey, when we talked about the exchange program, BCC, my college, had an exchange with Check Tech. And so that's what we kept referring to it to. What should I refer to it as?
Check Tech is good. Check Tech is the international shortage of Check Tech.
Okay, there we go. So when I say Check Tech, it's not a festival, it's you here at school. So the idea is you don't want to just put that you were at Check Tech for 5 years and earned a degree and these were your specialties, because you have specialties, right? Okay. What you want to do is say some of the things that you did while you were here. While you were here. Some project, some paper, some particular focus. Maybe while you were here, you really got excited about, tell me something you might have gotten excited about. Lasers. I love lasers. Okay, so you had this focus on lasers. You have to say, what is it that I've been doing in my life as a student that I can focus on to make my resume, and again, in the United States, we use the term resume as opposed to CV. A CV is something that's longer, that you use when you get lots older and have lots of publications or tons of jobs or awards. A resume is just the one page, simple, straightforward. So what you want to do is, who's in the last year of Check Tech? Okay. Okay, it's almost that time. And I'm going to ask a question before, and this kind of ties in when you said, you know, we don't have anything that we've done, okay? How many of you have letters of reference already? Two, okay. Here's the deal. Let's see, I'm just looking for the right kind of binder. Does anybody have a binder? That looks binder-like. Is that a binder? Three-hole binder. Does anybody have one in his or her possession?
What is it?
What is it? It looks like this, only it has three rings. Three rings. Okay. Well, you all know what I'm talking about. So imagine in your mind a three-hole binder. Okay. What you want to do, especially those of you who are leaving, fifth year is you're leaving, is that it? Maybe you might hang around another year. No? Okay. So the idea is, and this isn't just for the fifth year, this is for any time that you have done something in a class and your teacher has said, and you call them teachers, right? Okay. In the United States, we call them instructors or professors. Your teacher has said, that was great. Then what you want to do is, at some point, not the very, very end of the semester, you want to say, I'm putting together some letters of reference. Would you write a letter of reference for me? Now, you could always wait and try to get a letter of reference at the very last moment when you need one. But the time to collect letters of reference is the time when your teacher, the boss you have at your part-time job, who thinks you're just the best because you come to work and you do a good job, even though it's not related to your field, it's still a job that shows that you have a good work ethic, that you are responsible, and that you achieve at the job. So what you want to do is you want to ask for a letter of reference when the heart of the person thinks you are just, am I pounding my microphone? When the heart of the person thinks that you are just the best. What do you do with these letters of reference? You take them and you put them in what you can call a portfolio, or what I like to call a life binder. It is a binder. You have in it those, oh, may I? Thank you. You have in those a collection of these plastic protectors, and you slip in the letters of reference. If you're going to go to the United States, is anyone going, or going to any country to study? I mean, some of you are here from other countries, correct? Okay. Those of you who are going, those of you who are already here, have you collected any letters of reference from the teachers you've had? Chop, 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 chop. You want to do that, and you want to do that now. You want to do that now. You want to ask them. So you don't want to go back to your country. You may have your grades on your grade report, or what else do you call it, transcript. You may have your grades, but what you want to make sure that you have are personal letters that will attest to certain qualities that won't come through in a resume. And then you keep them in your portfolio. Because more and more, we're talking about resume, but if you get a chance to make a second impression, because the first impression is your cover letter and your resume, if you get a chance to make your second impression, which is your interview, then you will take to it your life binder, your portfolio, and you will say, here I have some letters from the time I studied at Czech Tech, or the time I studied in whatever country you're going to. Here are some letters from some of my previous employers. It was part-time and I was in school, but you have letters of reference. Later on also, as you get older and you start collecting these, it's kind of a way of looking back and saying, oh, I remember the time I was in high school and I had this. Okay. So it's a nice way of remembering. But what it does, it tells employers this. It tells employers that you have a history of success. And that's what they're looking for, because past success is the greatest predictor of future success. Any comments or questions about the portfolio or life binder? Or do you think I'm crazy? You aren't used to doing that? Okay. Okay. And sure.
What would you suggest us to say our teacher when we want this
letter of reference?
Yeah.
Okay. When? Is that what you said? Or?
Yeah,
well, you would say, I'm getting ready to apply for a job, and I was wondering if you could write me a short, always use the word short, you don't want to say long, write a long letter, wondering if you could write me just a short letter of reference, or you could even use the word note, a short note regarding what I'm doing in the class. Now, they're very busy, so what are they going to say? Exactly. So what they're going to say is, oh, I'm sorry, I'm just so busy. And when they say, I'm sorry, I don't have the time, I have lots of exams, and I know I spend my time in the Language Center of Electrical Engineering, and I'm in there, and they're there with the pile of papers, and they're going, rah, and they're pulling out their hair. They are busy people. They are very busy people. I don't know about the electrical engineering teachers, but the English teachers are real busy people. So your busy teachers will say, I don't have the time. I'm sorry. I would like to. They'll probably say that. I would like to, but I'm sorry. I just don't have the time. And then you say, how are we going to say this? Well, what are you going to say? Who wants to phrase it?
Well, Professor, I was just wondering if I could write it myself, if you can correct it.
Okay. Well, we'll leave out the correct it part. Okay. Let's put it, I'll put it right here. So when they say, no, I'm sorry, I'm too busy, you say, well, this way it doesn't sound like you've practiced it and you're ready to say it. Well, if it's, oops, okay, I'm using a Czech keyboard for the first time. In the English department, we have an English keyboard. If it, switch it, you can switch it.
Alt shift. Now it's Czech one. Now it's English.
Oh, terrific, thank you. If it is, if it's, well, we'll use, if it's all right with you, all right. How did I get all that? Okay, so what do you think? Well, if it's all right with you, I'll write something, and if you approve, you can just sign it. What do you think? Okay, so the idea is certainly you're not going to ask absolutely every teacher you have, but you should ask every boss that you've had. Every boss you've had, you should not leave a job without a letter of reference. And if your boss says, oh, I'll mail it to you, right. Okay, you want to have the letter of reference in hand. Because if you've done a good job for that part-time job, no matter what it is, even if it's in construction, if you've been a server, what else can you be doing part-time? Translating? Selling ice cream. Haven't you done a good job selling that ice cream? Didn't you do a good job with those sales? So what you want to do is you want something that once again shows you have a good track record, because past success is the greatest predictor of future success, and that's what they're looking for.
Can I only have a question to this topic?
Absolutely.
Because I think sometimes if you are applying, for example, to Siemens or to such a great companies, they will to each letter of reference, there will have to be a contact to the person who wrote it, even if it's maybe older, so that they can prove that that is right, that the person exists, and maybe
sure.
I think they will ask him personally, and it can happen that somebody doesn't want to write it because he doesn't want to be bothered in some years, or he's not sure if he will stay in his job or
sure. I think in this day and age with email, putting the person's email address at the bottom, maybe this is something that is maybe part of the Czech culture, maybe. I don't know. But generally, now in 2005, recommendations come via email or a request for a reference. I was in the language center, and I was frantically correcting my exams and doing my grades, because back in the United States, we're just finishing exams. You get 6 weeks for exams, right? 6 weeks? Lucky you. Okay. We get just 1 week. And so three of my exams were on Monday, with the last one ending Monday night. So, and of course, here now, we're 6 hours ahead of where I live. So, to make a long story short, I was in the language center, and I was doing my grades online for my students, because they took their exam, and everything was sent to me, and I'm correcting and doing everything, and I'm sending my grades online. I look at my email, and there was an email request for a teacher who was applying to another school, someone who had taught in our English department, and they were asking for a quick reference. And I just popped back, and it was no big deal. So the idea is people in positions of giving jobs, people in positions of giving grades, are people who are in positions of giving recommendations. So you don't have to ask, you certainly should not ask every teacher, because then you will be known as the student who wants a letter of reference from every teacher. You don't want to do that. You want to ask for maybe one or two teachers that you have worked with, that you admire, that you've gotten ones with, and teachers that you respect. So you respect that the letter that they will put in there, that they will sign, you would be happy to have. But the idea is that more and more, when you walk into an interview, you want to bring every gun you have. You want to bring your portfolio. You want to present yourself as the best. You are selling yourself. And maybe you don't want to take your portfolio, but get these letters, because you never know when you're going to need them. And if someone says, no, I won't even sign one if you write it. Okay, well, as we say in the United States, it never hurts to ask. It never hurts to ask. We also say that the first day of a new job is the first day you begin to look for a new job. Because if you're going to stay at a company like Siemens, is that the one you said? Okay, you're going to stay, you get a job at Siemens. Oh, terrific. Are you going to stay there your whole life? Probably not. Probably not. So you're not going to stay there your whole life. You remember what your resume is? It's a plant. It's a growing thing. So you have to start thinking, okay, I'm going to be at Siemens maybe 3, 5, 7 years, I don't know. You decide, or your boss will decide. And what are the skills? What are the talents? What are the accomplishments that you're going to be able to put on your resume as a result of your time there? Not just, I worked at Siemens for 5 years. You want to think of the growth that you are experiencing. Okay, Now, I still haven't told you the secret. Do you want to know the secret? I mean, good grief, we could have our 90 minutes and you won't know. How do you get their attention? Remember, you only have 15 to 20 seconds. Okay, remember, I asked any of you who has a resume, if you have one of these, then just tell me, what is the most important part of the resume? Okay, who knows? Anybody want to guess? Actually, the cover letter, a good cover letter with the resume, is very powerful. It strikes a real strong... I have to be careful. This is how I broke my wrist with karate to begin with, and so I can't go punching anymore. Cover letter and resume together pack a real strong punch. However, we're talking about the most important part of the resume. So what is the most important part of the resume? Anybody want to guess?
Qualification I
have. Okay.
Skills.
Okay, you use the word qualifications. But what do you mean by where you say your skills that you have?
Yes.
Okay.
Everything together. Like skills.
Everything.
The schools and experiences, what's our...
How long is it?
Probably 2 or 3, like, realistic points, let's say 20, 30 words.
20, 30 words. Okay, congratulations. Okay. There you go, mister. Robin Ryan surveyed, this is not just her opinion, she surveyed 600 human resource managers. And the 600 managers said that for them, the most important part was the summary of qualifications section. Now, 600 hiring managers, people who were in charge of doing the hiring, because they said that this tripled the impact, that it was more powerful with this summary of qualifications section. Employers reported this was one of the very first areas that they read. And if the briefly stated summary shows that you have solid ability to fill that job, what does that do? It catches their attention. The summary did. The summary caught their attention. They slow down. Remember, 15, 20 seconds is pretty fast. They slow down and they give the applicant more careful consideration. And how many resumes use it? How many use this summary? Only about 5% of resumes. And you have it. Do you have it in your resume?
No.
No. Okay, so the idea is that only 5%, I forgot the 5, sorry. About 5% of resumes contain this, and this American career coach, when she works with people, makes sure that every single resume that comes out from under her as a coach includes the summary of qualifications. What is it? You pretty much summarized, Mr. over there. So let's look. What is it? You want to think of it as a mini outline of you. It's a mini outline of you. So, for example, you leave, you go and you work at Siemens for 3 years, and then you go on and you work at another company for 2 years, and then you go to another company and you work there for a year. A hiring manager does not have to look and do all the totaling to see how many years of experience you have. So what you want to do, and I know you don't have experience yet, but you have the other things. You have the other things in this outline. You want to think of it as a mini outline of you. It's going to be how long? 4 to 6 sentences. The sentences will not have the word I. The sentences will not have the word my, because whose resume is it? You don't need the I. You don't need the my. Your resume, the summary will not have weak verbs. am, was, has, have. You're not going to have weak verbs. You're going to have action words in it. Excuse me. And it's going to give an overview of experience, if you have any, your accomplishments, talents, work habits, and your skills. I'm going to give you an example of it. And it does not deal with electrical engineering at all. Okay. I'm going to keep in. Okay. Look at it. It has four possible sentences. Remember, it says 4 to 6 sentences. Now, the first one, okay, here you are in English class. What is the verb of the first sentence? Do your English teachers do that? I guess not. Okay. I'll tell you then, there is no verb in this sentence because, look at it, 12 years management experience in this field dealing with what kind of company? So that's what I've done. Now, true, you don't have, you might not have electrical engineering experience yet, so obviously you're not going to put that down as experience. But if you have had any kind of experience in the workforce, you want to, you know, you want to try to take anything that you've had and don't think of it as trying to minimize it, that it's not important. You want to look at it in a positive light. Remember, you're selling yourself. So this is experience right here. We're looking at experience. We don't have a subject. We don't have a verb. What would the subject and verb be if we had a subject and verb?
I have,
right. Okay, now let's look at the next one. Expertise includes employment law, all of the areas that you have become an expert in. Do you see the word my in there? My expertise? No, we know it's you. So we don't see the word my, and we just have here everything that you consider to be the area of, let's say, your talents. Let's go to the next sentence. Analytical, in English is my native language, analytical decision maker with excellent problem solving skills. That is not a sentence. Basically, the person would say, I am an analytical decision maker. But the I am is weak. We know you're talking about yourself. So here, what are you saying? I'm a good decision maker. You can even say that now. Analytical, you analyze things. You want to look at your own skills so that even if you don't have experience, you want to look at the talents and skills that you have and put them in the summary of qualifications to catch the attention of the person reading the resume. So here, this, it's not I am, you've gotten rid of that. Analytical with excellent problem-solving skills. So here, once again, we've looked at the skills. It also focuses a little bit on work habits, that you make decisions. And then the very last sentence, which is, again, not a sentence, recognize. So instead of saying, I have been recognized, the I have been is eliminated, recognized for ability to develop professional growth and increase their productivity. Now, when you look at that, that, in a sense, is a kind of a skill, because what you're saying here is that I can bring the best out of people. And that's what this particular job wants. Questions about the summary of qualifications or anything?
Does it really has to be like sentences if I put there, like, not a sentence, it's just a note, like a, something in the bullets? Is it better or just it is better to put
okay.
in the sentence mm-hmm. kind of a form?
Okay. You have bullets throughout your resume. Mm-hmm. You have your resume is full of bullets. You bullet your degrees, you bullet anything that you've done. So you have bullets throughout. The summary of qualifications is right there as a mini outline that summarizes what you've done. So according to all of this research, according to the latest, and you can check it out on careerbuilder.com, and I have some other recommendations farther on from other people who have used it. This is at a point where right there in one little mini paragraph, you summarize the best in you, what you are bringing to the job. Yes, sir.
Only one simple question.
Oh, I only want complicated questions, but go ahead.
Should the summary of qualifications be at the top or at the appendix of the resume?
Okay, good question. Remember, you're asking, you want to get the attention of the person reading it. So, I have a little point in here about don't lie, don't lie, don't lie. Don't exaggerate, don't misrepresent. Whatever you say in your resume should be the truth. Absolutely. Okay. Now, here's the answer to your question. Where should you put it in the resume? You want to put it right after your name, your address, your cell number, email address. If you want to have a fax, you want it, you give your, I don't know, whatever, your web page. Whatever you put down as your contact information, and then you put your career objective. To obtain a job in the field of electrical engineering, and then you go to what is the summary of qualifications. So you put it right after that. So what does a person doing looking at the resume? They don't have to look at all your bullets. They don't have to take your bullets and add up and try to figure everything out. All they have to do is read that one little paragraph, and what is the result of that? You actually, okay. What it does is, if it is written well, and remember, it should never be satisfactory to you. You should always say, oh, here's my resume. Could you look at, could you tell me what you think of my summary of qualifications? You should never be totally satisfied with your resume. Yes, you send it out because it's time to apply for a job. But remember, it's a plant. You can't just let it sit there and vegetate. So what you want to do is you want to constantly look at it and try to make it better. So you want to put that after, and if you do, that will actually help stand out right there at the top, and it will pull the employer in for a closer look. And as I mentioned before, from an employer's point of view, there is no greater predictor of success than past performance. So what you want to do is you want to convince potential employers that you are the best candidate for the job. And to do that, you have to say, I didn't just spend 5 years at Czech Tech. While I was here, I maximized what I was doing. I worked with instructors. I did presentations. I wrote papers. I created programs. Whatever you did, you want to toot your own horn. Toot, 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 this is what I did. You're tooting your own horn. You have to say what you have done. Because if you don't do it, then someone else will, and that person will be invited in for the opportunity to make a second impression. Sir.
Where do you put that in your resume?
The summary of qualifications?
That belongs to summary of qualifications, what we have done in the paragraph?
Yes. That a little mini paragraph? That is it. There you go. No. No, the summary of qualifications, here it is usually 4 to 6 sentences. So this particular one was really quite powerful. But it's only 4 sentences. So that right there is the summary of qualifications. Because remember, the person only has 15 to 20 seconds, and then we'll just say, want to look for a reason to eliminate your resume.
The problem is that normally, I think, when you are applying for a job in a company, they don't. For me, that what I have seen is that they don't ask for a resume, they ask for a CV. And on the CV, you put the summary of qualifications, mm-hmm. but it's not to be more objective. I can do this, 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 and this. I don't know.
Okay. Actually, a resume is a CV. A resume is a CV. The resume is where you are actually taking what your qualifications are. So on a resume, what do you usually put? You put your education, correct? Okay, your high school and your university, right? With whatever your major is. What else do you put on your resume?
Work experience.
You put your work experience. And you usually end up with?
Special skills, driving license and so on.
Special skills that you have. And you have them. You've been at Czech Tech for 5 years. I hope you have some special skills. Skills that you've developed in your field that will make you valuable. And you might say, well, they know. The employer knows I can do this. Well, sometimes you need to actually spell out how you enhanced your skills. There are students who just sit in the classroom. In the United States, this happens. It probably doesn't happen here. They sit in the classroom and they only do the minimum. Okay, here I'm sure that you do the absolute, you know, max. Okay, but the idea is what you're doing is you want to show how you have gone one step further in your college education, your university education. The perspective that I'm presenting here is not the Czech Tech presentation because I come from the United States. Though I am also a member of the European Union, I have two passports. I have an Irish passport and a U.S. passport. So I'm a citizen of the European Union. I can work in the European Union. In my resume, I have summary of qualifications. I mentioned I have 3 resumes, right? Okay. So I have my summary of qualifications right up there. Because you don't stop working on your resume, you stop working on it when you die. Okay. So the idea is you're always trying to improve it. So the summary of qualifications, the comments that I've given here are from what I know in the job market from the U.S. perspective. And again, CV equals resume. Resume equals CV. You will find all of the sites, monster.com, careerbuilder.com, all of the job sites make reference to the resume. It's very rare for you to see the word CV. So resume includes the same thing that your CV includes. Job experience, and your special skills. And if you want to put the references, you may have 2-3 references, you can list them there.
A moment ago you said that the CV was longer, and the resume should be like one page
long. Okay, Resume is essentially one page. A CV can be, for example, someone who is the rector of Czech Tech University. Okay? Obviously, it's a he,
yeah,
I bet. Somehow I knew it would be. Okay, the Czech Tech rector obviously will have something that is longer. He can have a one-page resume, but he can have something that is 9, 10, 12 pages because he's made presentations, he has written probably, he has spoken at different universities. So he has more to put in. But usually the first thing you send would be a resume, and we use the term resume, but CV is more popular here, so use CV.
May I ask you
sure.
If you know how it is in the United Kingdom or Ireland, resume or CV, is it
CV?
CV.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions?
Yes,
sure.
I have one. What about the photo? Do you add a photo on it?
Only if the employer has requested a photo.
Otherwise not.
Not usually, no. No, we don't include a photo as part of the usual process of a resume. Yeah. What would the purpose be, just out of curiosity? What's the purpose of a photo?
I think it's illegal in this country, actually, to ask for that. But, well, the companies, they do that.
Okay, companies ask for the photo? Okay. If they ask for it, if you want the job, okay. But you're right, it is in the United States. The United States has a lot of lawyers. It is what we refer to as a very litigious society. I'll just type the word. It's a very litigious society, meaning it is, I think I spelled it correctly, litigious, which means it is, if there's some form of discrimination because of race, because of ethnicity, because of gender. For example, if a company will only hire, prefers to hire males, and Robin is a name that's male and female, only a picture will confirm, unless there's an M or F on the resume, not on the resume, on the actual job application, which there usually is. So the idea is that the photo, I don't see any purpose for a photo. Help me out if you think there's...
Is there risk? Maybe I can imagine if you have here in the center of Prague, you have some fashion shop, there couldn't be anyone selling some clothes that are...
ugly.
For example, for, I don't know, $100.
Okay.
It couldn't do anybody from...
No, I think the idea is if they're building the desk base, it's nice to have a picture of the man or of the applicant, so you just, if he's going for a meeting, you know
who it is. Okay. Well, I guess you could include it. In the United States, it is not common to do, unless it's requested. Unless it's requested. So... But if it's the common practice here to include a photo, then I guess you have to go along with what is common practice. Any other question?
Yeah, even the less that the CV could be about 3, 4, 5 pages, is it more convenient like making it shorter for the first time than when you give it
right.
The first time with only one sheet?
Right, absolutely. The very first... resume or CV that you send to an employer should only be one page. When you go for the interview, you can add more. take in something longer. You have your life portfolio. When you go in for your interview, you go in with all guns. All guns. You bring in your four-page list of everything that you've done since kindergarten. You bring in everything, every letter of reference you have, every project you may have done, maybe something. We have at some schools after you're at the end of your bachelor's, there is what is called a senior project. And the senior project is something that's really big. It's a presentation that you make. You research it. You do it. So the whole idea with the senior project is it's a big deal. You've created it. So your senior project can be something that you could include, at least include the topic. But you want to take everything that you've done. If you've done it and it is of value, somehow work it in as a skill or into your life portfolio. You can always take it out. Remember, it's a three-ring binder. Okay, if you decide you don't want it in there, take it out. Okay, that's when you go in for your second impression. Yes, ma'am.
The Americans write article hobbies in resume.
Yes. Only if the hobby in some way can show either that it's related to the job or if it's something that is unique and different to show that you are a creative person and not a dull person. Hobbies, you don't want a long list, a laundry list, as we say, or a shopping list of all the hobbies you have. Stick to two. You can put it in. It's not absolutely essential. You don't need to put it in. It could be something that when you get the interview, it could be one of the questions they ask. What do you like to do in your spare time?
Under sports, it's
always good, I think, under hobbies to include maybe some sport if you want to, because it shows that you are physically active, that you are not always sitting behind a computer working as a little electrical engineer person, that you are balanced, that you have a balanced view of life, that you are not going to be a little... And I know this is from the Czech language, a little robot, okay, because the word robot comes from Czech, okay? So you're not going to be this little robot that's just going to work, and then proceed to collapse. So you've shown that you stay physically active. So you can put in, but you don't want to OD, overdo, you don't want to OD on your hobbies. You don't want to OD on your hobbies. We didn't get to cover letter, but many people underestimate the power of a cover letter. And I will just say that the cover letter should never be something that you write and it's the same letter to everybody. You want to take the cover letter, research the company that you are applying to, and make sure that you have skills that match that company, that you are saying. You are thinking from the employer's point of view. Okay, now what does this employer need to fill this job? You have to think not as the employee, as the person who wants to be hired. You have to sit in the chair of the employer and say, I bet he's looking for... That's the point of view that you want to be looking for. I have my presentation that includes other things, and I would be glad to email it to... is there some email list? How did you all find out about this? Is there? Okay. What I can do is I will email it to Slava. Should I email it to Slava? He's a busy guy, though. He's leaving tonight at 11 for 3 days. So I'll email it to Slava. I'll email it to Slava, and then you can look at the points that I've made with regard to cover letter and with regard to the job interview, which I did not get to, but I've made a little bit of reference to, and with regard to tips for life. I also have a presentation about the difference between Europeans and Americans, but you're not going to find out about that because we're out of time. So, but I will email the file to Slava, and then Slava will send it out to you as a group. Any last quick questions?
So I'd like to say a big thank you to Carol Gavin.
You guys are great. Thank you.
And I'd like to invite you for the next lecture that takes place on Tuesday, 6 p.m., and it's about numbers in our life. So you're welcome.